Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right, well, Little Moons, a new graphic novel out through Highwater Press, written by Jen Storm, who joins me on the program. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, this is not your first graphic novel, but I know that you started as a like novelist, not writing, you know, specifically for this format. And I'm curious to start with kind of like what writing for this kind of format, how different is it from, you know, writing narrative fiction in a novel format for you?
It's very different. I would say like writing literature format where it's just all words, it's very solo experience. But writing a graphic novel, there's a lot more, it's like a script writing. So it's like you're writing a movie for other people, not just the reader, but for also the artists, the colorists. You have to take into account, like, you only have room for so many words and so many quotes. So you don't have any of those borders when you're writing a book, and you don't have page limits usually either, where graphic novels you do, because everything has to end with a certain clean amount of pages.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of differences, but it's also kind of fun too, because I feel more like a director of a movie and a script than I do when I'm writing like novel books.
Do you envision things in your head differently?
I do. And I think that's the cool part too, is that like the way I envision a story when I'm writing it, even when I think I'm giving away like very detailed, blunt direction, like the character is looking this way in this house, that's this color, like, you know what I mean? Very blunt and direct. When I reread it after the artist has drawn it or even colored it, it's almost like reading it again, because it's now been through somebody else's mind and filtered vision of what they interpret from my words and my direction. So that part's always been the funnest part to me when it comes to writing graphic novels, is seeing the other artists who are involved take their spin on it and their artistic suggestions or interpretations. And then I get to basically reread my story again.
Is that because it creates an element of surprise for you?
It can. Like, it's more so like the angle that I maybe seen in my head, or the way the character looks in my head, even if I describe it fairly detailed, when redrawn by somebody else with my interpretations, it still comes out a little bit different. So like, that's the part that I think is really cool, is because like when you read a book or when I read a book, the way we envision things in our mind are going to be a lot different, even if we're reading the same story.
Right, like picturing a character.
Yeah, like, and you'd never know. Like, I don't know what your mind plays for you when you're reading a book, even though we know the same story, what happened, where it was, blah, blah, blah. And it's really come to light for me when I was writing graphic novels, how different people can see things and interpret things and like really give the ambience to things, especially artists. And I really enjoy like giving as much freedom as I can to artists and their interpretation of my stories.
And I guess so this gives you the opportunity to like see what someone else's perspective on a character you create is, like in a way that, you know, if you wrote a novel, you wouldn't know what the picture in another person's mind was.
Exactly. So that's the part I think is like really neat about graphic novels, is the collaboration aspect of it, that I feel like on a much lesser scale is probably kind of akin to like writing a movie script and seeing it play out.
So you worked with a different pair of artists on this one than you did on Firestarters. Like,
yes.
Did you like purposely seek out new people to collaborate with, or how did you come to Ryan and Alice?
Well, it's interesting because it's usually the publishers that pair us up. So Highwater usually, through their own process, there's like a couple things they need to take into consideration, is like each of our parts is timed out to take about 3 to 4 months. So when they offer, if I'm writing something, I'm working with an editor, it's probably going to take about 3 to 4 months to write and really tighten up a script. And then from there, they're going to be looking at that script even while they're editing with me and being like, who's available to do this script and who has the style that matches the story? So they'll kind of be trying to create the best team for the story that's being written so that it has the best chance of being told in the way that is most authentic to the story. So it's not really a roll of the dice all the time where people are like, I like this artist, therefore they're going to pair up with my story because some art doesn't match some stories. Because there's some people that have that art that's really moody and kind of creepy and cool, which would be good for like ghost stories and like monsters and like those kind of cryptid kind of stories. And then there's some artists who are like Scott Henderson, who did my first graphic novel, who's like that classic comic style. And then there's just everyone has a different style that fits. And I think Ryan and Alice have a really cool style for this particular book that I don't think would have would it made it stronger for having them on it.
So there's like logistic and stylistic considerations that
There
go,
is.
yeah.
That's like behind the scenes that like the editors do a lot of work to coordinate all these things and to like see who matches who and all these things. And like artists can change over time too, where they're like, they can maybe start or they think they're going to make it. And then they're like, oh, I have another project and it's getting pushed back. And then you have to switch to somebody else. That doesn't always happen, but that can happen sometimes. So there's all these like behind the scenes things that's happening to make these books happen. It's not as solo as like just bugging me for a deadline, like it would be if I was writing a book or a short story or whatever, an article. It's about basically coming and like orchestrating all these people that are on different timelines and different deadlines and trying to get them all to meet them. So I couldn't imagine.
So what kind of like interpersonal relationship building happens? Like, do you have much contact with the artists, or is that through the editors?
It's different every time. Like when I did Firestarters, it was very intertwined with me and Scott. Like a lot of it was me and him going back and forth. And a lot less the editor at the time. And then this time, and even when we did This Place, which was an anthology with the same publisher, I had a lot more kind of back and forth with the editor who was going back with the artist. And then with this one, her name is Irene. She was the editor on this one, and she back and forth between all of us. So I didn't actually have to send any emails directly to them, even though I have worked with Ryan before, actually, as an artist, because him and I worked on a story in This Place together.
Gotcha. So you
But
had
on
an
this
existing
particular project, I
relationship.
didn't have to. Yeah, it's always different. Every project, it's different because it's kind of dependent on how the editor hits the project, 'cause it's basically they're the team project manager.
Does that make it exciting or daunting for you?
I think it's exciting because I think the collaborative process is like something that's exciting for me and that I enjoy. If I had to do it all myself, if I was the editor, I'd be intimidated. But because I'm like
Sure.
the team player, it's different.
The responsibility isn't necessarily on all your shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. So like
Yeah.
that, in that way, it's like it's nice because I get to just tell a really nice story. And then the responsibility of finding an artist, paying that artist, like putting that artist on a timeline, that's all erased for me. That's all on the publisher.
So the turning to the like text of the of this story in the acknowledgments, or I guess like in your note at the book end, you credit your son for coming up with the idea of little moons. Like, was it just his saying the phrase little moons that prompted you, or like
It was, there's certain aspect because like the story takes on a lot of different themes and different stuff. So it's not like he has it to do with all of those, but the title Little Moons and the ideas behind it, like with a little bit of the paranormal aspect of the story, came from him. Because when he was about, I think he was around 2 years old, he was still in a crib, but he was able to stand in the crib. You know what I mean? That age.
yep. And maybe
And
crawl out.
yeah, exactly. He was at that breaking point. I remember I went in there, and this was during a time when somebody close to me was missing, and we were trying to find her. And it was a very stressful time. And that's kind of a little bit of why I wrote the story too, is because it was a way for me to come to terms with grief and that hang around between when you're not sure if that person is just missing or if they're gone. You know what I mean? So
Right.
I was under a lot of stress at that point. And my son was talking when I was putting him to bed, and he said, "Auntie came." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And I'm an only child, so there's no like blood aunties. And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" And he's like, "She came to visit me." And like he was talking, he's like, her ghost. And I thought, okay. And I was thinking, like, he's a little like curious. I'm like, maybe he's overheard me talking on the phone. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, well, what did Auntie look like? And I was just kind of playing along with him to see what he was trying to say. And he said, "She looked like little moons." And I was like, so in that moment, kind of freaked out, because in my mind, I was like, he's looking like orbs. And then I was like, "I'm smudging your room right now." And so I smudged his room, and he said, "Don't forget to do the window. That's where they come in." And I was like, "Oh my God." And so I did. And I remember I was telling that story to a couple other people, a couple writers, actually, David Robertson, and an artist, Gregory Chomchuk. And he said, "You need to write this story. And if you don't write it, I'm going to write it." Like, that's the perfect title. And then, so I did, and I wrote it. But that's where his inspiration came from,
And
was
that
him saying that.
smudging sequences in the book.
Yeah. Well, that was a very like powerful moment for me in my personal life. You know what I mean? Because it kind of helped me come to terms with, because we did find her. She did pass. And so there was a lot going on at that point in time in my life that I was like, he could have overheard it. It could have been anything. But the fact that he chose to say that she looked like little moons, that part for me, it was, and then to say that they come through the window, like all these things that like culturally came together, I was just like, oh my gosh. So, and then there's also the belief that little ones are close to the spirit world because they're just coming in when others are coming out. So they tend to kind of be more connected to those things, is the belief. So that's why in the book, the little boy is the one that's constantly seeing things, and no one's really acknowledging that he's seeing or experiencing these things.
Yeah. So there's like instances where, you know, like Chelsea's room, the light is on, or like a car is pushed back from it, or, you know, little things happen. When it comes to like writing that, like, are you describing like exactly what happens, or are you giving Ryan and Alice like specific kind of cues? Like,
yes. Well, there is, it's like, so I am giving specifics of like in the script, I'll say like what's happening, but it was one of the challenges that Irene and I and Ryan and possibly even Alice were like, how do we show a light flickering? How do you show that without taking up a bunch of boxes? Because we only have so many few boxes to tell this whole story in. And the constant, like, how can we keep this story flowing without me making a character narrate at all or talk too much? Like, there's a lot of storytelling that relies heavily on both Brian and Alice because you don't have the word space to tell the reader too much. You know what I mean? Like, constantly we were having to cut down, like, how can we say this three sentence statement in one sentence?
Right. Is that like, does that present a different challenge for you, like in terms of like
Oh yeah.
being succinct, like in a way that you wouldn't necessarily have to be on a, in a novel?
Yes, 100%. That's the biggest challenge, is because every one of these graphic novels and stories I've written, I could have and would have made it longer. Like, because I feel like, but is that the writer in me where I want to like spell it all out? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Does that
Or is
extend to
that the challenge
dialogue?
of everyone? Oh, that 100%. Like, it's the heaviest part is the dialogue. Because if I have a character going off about whatever, or like having dialogue between two characters, and you only have like a tiny, like, even if you look at like in a graphic novel, how small these little boxes are, And then imagine trying to have a back and forth, even three word bubbles, and how much of this, like, of that box that would take up. So there's so much you have to do and be creative about to say the same thing without having to say it. You know what I mean? So I have to do a lot of, well, Ryan has to do a lot of heavy lifting in that capacity. And also Alice, because colors tell their own story as well.
Right.
And that this was the first time when I asked, like, and requested, like, a certain type of color palette for a mood. Because before I didn't, it was Ryan and Donovan who, like, for fire starters, like, it was a very fiery color palette, which makes sense. But I didn't even know to think of that at the time because it was my first graphic novel. And then after my second, like the This Place one, I kind of saw how colors really help tell the story as well. And then with this one, I had a bit more say about the colors because now I'm like, okay, now I see how important that piece really is.
Yeah.
So it's a very purple, blue, like kind of like Northern Lights kind of colors, which I think go along well with like little moons, the darkness, and how women are tied to the moons traditionally. Like all those kind of things I thought were nice to have in the color story.
And it seems to be kind of like at once both like kind of ominous and comforting, right? Like that, like
Yeah, and that's like my favorite mood.
you were talking about kind of like sort of the problem solving of like distilling a story. One of the things I thought was really clever was the use of kind of like social media when Chelsea goes missing, that like the like kind of timeline of like shares and posts and stuff to kind of like condense that time, like and quickly kind of
Yes.
convey the like panic.
Yes, and that was a lot of back and forth conversation too, because we were like, how do we convey time lapsing and that stress and like the community? And however, like, how do we convey all of that? And I think we had 2 pages. You know what I mean? So we were trying, like, and those are some of the tools we use, right? It's like you get to use timestamps from social media posts. You get to use night and day. You get to use like all these people talking on the phone at once. So you know that there's like the Moxon line, so to speak, or telephone tag going on, trying to talk about it and trying to find her, like those kind of tools. Which was really neat because in a book, I would have to do a lot of that writing it out. You know what I mean? And
Yeah, or
dialogue.
like or just how many like cigarettes butts are on the ground beside her
Yeah.
either, right? Like that, like
There's different ways you'd have to tell that same kind of story, but the work is now kind of put onto Ryan to convey those images because I could say like, oh, like let's do social media, like what me and I just said, that's a conversation through email that he then interpreted the way he did in those 2 pages. And then so
you
when we got to see it now looking at it after our conversation and then looking at that page for the first time, you kind of really get to appreciate how much work and thought and creativity that the artists of graphic novels really put into it to tell the story. And it's almost like reading it for the first time for me, even though I wrote it.
There's also like an interesting use of like I don't want to say blank spaces, but periods where there's no dialogue or
Yeah.
text, right? Like that there's a lot conveyed just in the image. And how much is that, like, are you writing that out or leaving that to Ryan to convey?
I think how it probably honest happened is I wrote the script and I wrote it to tell the story. So I just got the story out of me. And then me and the editor look at it now from a graphic novel perspective, because like I can do it on my own enough to do a script where I'm like, okay, page one, bang, 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 bang. Like these are the things I know can fit on a page. And then so I can go through all the pages that way and kind of have a general map of how the story can fit and lay out and how much room I have. And then Irene or whoever's editing the piece will come in and then really like help me finesse that into now box to box to box, right? And like, how can we now break this down even further? And how can we say this piece without saying this piece? Maybe there's an image of Chelsea, or there's an image of Rianne, or like whatever, doing this, that, or like, you know what I mean? And then it becomes a lot more of a collaboration at that point of how do we tell this story without literally telling it, by allowing the images to do a lot of the heavy lifting, because there's just not a lot of room in graphic novels for words.
No, for sure. Now, the story itself, Rihanna is the central character, and I'm curious about kind of the decision to center around the sister. Like, was that something you arrived upon initially, or did that develop as you're writing the script? Like, how you would tell this story?
I think I came upon it because I knew I wanted the character to be female. And I also knew I wanted her to be both observer and participant of what was happening. I think if it came from too young of a character, you'd miss a lot. And I think if it came from too old of a character, you'd miss a lot of the experience for that age range that this graphic novel is kind of aimed at. Because I think a lot of people feel somewhat helpless in these instances. And adults take over, police take, like, you know what I mean? There's a lot of things that kind of get taken over, but you still have this ache, so to speak, and these experiences with all the relationships in your life. You're not the only one grieving or looking or searching or at certain points in time of acceptance or grief or whatever. You know what I mean? So I really wanted to kind of experience the relationship with grief and how different people experience grief and handle grief differently. And it's not always pretty or tied up in a nice little bow, and not every parent is perfect. Not everyone handles it ideally. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a clean thing.
Yeah, no, like you said, the adults might take over, but they don't necessarily know what they're doing any more than the children do.
Exactly. And I think a lot of children feel like I would hate for somebody going through that, like a young person going through that, to think that there's something wrong with their family, or to think that when they read stories about mothers, it's always like this picture perfect nurturing mother who knows just what to say at just the right time for just the right occasion. Like, you know what I mean? Or that it's always the man who runs away from the family, or it's always like the grandma who knows what to do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all those little stereotypes that I think we pick up in stories along the way, like as we grow up. I was like, I really wanted to make sure that there was characters that had that human element to them, or that complication that makes a little bit more of a human experience, even if it's not ideal.
That you're not playing to tropes.
Yeah. And I want room for there to be like that element, because I do think grief isn't pretty, right? And I do think that children have a hard time, especially when their parents are no longer being predictable.
Grief isn't pretty, but you right in the afterward that you know the mourning traditions that are demonstrated in the book are drawn from your Ojibwe teachings. I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about like bringing that in and were you hesitant at all in terms of how you represented that?
Yeah, I was. The big thing I have been hesitant about is I do not in any way want to contribute to pan-Indigenous ideas. And so I don't want to put in there like, this is how First Nations people grieve. This is how Ojibwe people grieve. This is how these people of Canada grieve. You know what I mean? Because not only is all Ojibwe communities different, but many First Nations have similarities. They're different. Communities do things different ways. Families do things different ways. So I wanted to be very cognizant to say that my teachings are not universal by any means. Like, it's not what all Ojibwe people do. It's not what every community or First Nations people do. This is just what I was taught. So like, that's kind of where I was wanting to do that little write-up, but I'm also careful in the book where I show certain things, where if you were somebody who knew what those meant, if you had those teachings, you might recognize it. But if you didn't, it might be just be something that maybe you're more curious about and you ask, somebody that maybe could teach you about it. But I definitely didn't want to be giving teachings in the book because there's a lot of responsibility there and there's a lot of controversy about putting teachings in writing. So I don't feel like I have the traditional authority to kind of give those teachings like that, but I did want to acknowledge them because they're there. They helped me. And sometimes people use them in different ways as well. 'Cause like, for instance, I think it's fairly like, and this is me assuming again, but I feel like it's fairly common knowledge that hair and hair cutting is tied to grief, or it's like something that we've fairly established to do, like where when we're grieving, we cut our hair. And in the book, she cuts her hair, but she also uses it as her tobacco ties.
Yes.
And that's not a teaching. That's just something that I thought of that would be like my way of grieving or my way of tying something that is traditional of teaching with something that made me feel better. So like I was kind of doing that with her as well, because not everything, especially with grief, is done to the T or to the book or to the whatever. Like a lot of times ceremony is about what makes you feel better and like your intention with it. So that's where that came from. There's a couple other things in the book too, but that's one of the big ones.
For sure. Did you talk to an elder or knowledge keeper at all about how you would do
Yeah,
that,
and
or?
actually, because you're from U of M, you might know them. Their name's Carl Stone.
I do.
Yeah, so he helped me actually with some of those components because I did want, and High Water too, they want to be very thorough with how the stories are represented. But Carl has been somebody I've known pretty much my whole life. So he was somebody who was very important with writing this book. He helped me along the way and gave me a bit of ideas as well.
Well, I mean, it took a community to make this book, but Jen, I appreciate you making the time to talk about it. Little Moons is out through High Water Press right now. Congratulations on its release.
Thank you.